This is an iHeart podcast.
There are moments in your life where you look back on how you used to think about things and you say to yourself, gosh, I was so naive. You ever have any of those moments? As you get older, it happens to you. I'm not trying to do that. Well, as you get older and wiser, but it is true. As you get older and you observe things throughout life, you wake up to how naive you once were. But this has happened to me a bunch, especially because I've been stupid most of my life. I think about things like the Patriot Act. When I was young, especially a Marine, you know, young, 20 years old Marine, hard charger, and the Patriot Act gets passed, I'm sitting there saying to myself, yeah, forget those terrorists, let's go get them. Let's wiretap all their phones and let's snatch them all up. Throw them in a dungeon somewhere. Let's go hunt them down all over the planet. And whenever I would hear somebody, it was normally Ron Paul people, whenever I would hear a Ron Paul person say, are you nuts? This is evil. It's going to be used against Americans. I would do this whole thing. Okay, Mr. Soft on Terror, Mr. Whack Job, like the government would ever aim its guns at the citizens. Oops. Kind of missed the boat on that one. They were very, very right. Now it's very, very wrong. Look what we have now. This happens when you talk to people, and when I was younger, I used to think this way too, about there being global things happening, about there being some global cabal of elites who are out there, as we speak, plotting and planning to destroy you and your way of life. If you were to go over to your neighbor's house, a friend of yours, someone you hang out with, you have a couple beers on the weekends, take the kids fishing together, you hang out. Maybe family board game night. And he pretty much shares your values. He probably even votes Republican every single election. But if you were to tell him, hey, listen, there's these super, super wealthy guys, international guys, not even of any government, but they run this major, major institution. And this institution has global influence across governments across the globe, where they not only are recruiting young members to infiltrate governments, they have said that's what they're doing on camera. But wait, there's more. And you can see your neighbor's face right now, right? He's already doing the eye rolling thing, but you tell him, no, but wait, there's more. They have already partnered, this is public information, they have partnered with the UN to implement a plan that is about 7 years away. It's the 2030 plan. To implement a plan to completely abolish everything from private property rights to your freedom of speech globally. They want to take away your car. They want to implant things in your brain. They want to create a super surveillance state. If you were to tell your neighbor that, what would he be looking at you like? He'd be sitting there thinking, okay, this, are you on drugs? Are you feeling okay? Do we need to get you checked in somewhere? He would. You know he would. And if you were to have told me that 10 years ago, I would have done the same thing. Oh, gosh, here we go again with the crazies. Let's dial it down a notch. You know everything I just said is true, right? You know there is a cabal of global elites, and they are working hand in hand with virtually every single government in the Western world to completely destroy everything about your way of life. They look at your freedoms, your freedom of speech, the freedom to say whatever you want online, the freedom to own firearms, your freedom to own whatever car you want and drive it wherever you want, your freedom to spend your money wherever you want. They look at all these freedoms you have as being not just absurd, they look at your freedoms as being evil and something that very much needs to be restructured.
What we have to confront is a deep, systemic, and structural restructuring of our world. And this will take some time. And the world will look differently after we have gone through this transition process.
That is a Mr. Klaus Schwab. He's the head of the World Economic Forum. Born in Germany in 1938, not to get into that. If you were to see an interview with Klaus Schwab in his home office, you will notice a bust of some kind behind him on the bookshelf. That's a bust of Vladimir Lenin. Klaus Schwab and his World Economic Forum are famous for this statement. This is their view of the restructuring. You will own nothing and you will be happy. They want you to be just a mindless drone, living in a pod, eating what you're told, going where you're told, doing what you're told, owning nothing except for what they give you. And that's the restructuring that will make the world a better place. And it is so important you understand how these people see themselves. I talk often about what the Western leaders have in common. I always say there are three things they have in common. One, no love of country. Two, no connection to the real world and how normal people live. And three, how they see themselves. They see themselves as kings and queens. You are simply you're a peasant. You shouldn't have all these freedoms. The peasants shouldn't have freedoms. The king should determine it. But honestly, I have probably shortchanged them when I say kings and queens. Maybe I need to start altering how I talk. They don't really just see themselves as kings and queens. They see themselves as gods.
It didn't say 200 years. To give a conservative estimate, there won't be Homo sapiens on planet Earth. It's not that we'll destroy ourselves in some calamity. Much more likely, we will use advanced technology, biotechnology, nanotechnology, direct brain-computer interfaces to upgrade Homo sapiens into different kinds of beings, beings which are different from us, much more than we are different from Neanderthals. Beings which will have different bodies, different minds, different brains. So I think we are heading towards the upgrading of Homo sapiens into gods. The future of life belongs to intelligent design, but the intelligent designers will not be some gods above the clouds. We are going to be the intelligent designers of the future of life in the universe.
Think your neighbor would enjoy watching that video? Oh, he's thinking into himself right now. Okay, all right, crazy person. Maybe there's something to this. I understand, but let's be honest. This is just pie in the sky stuff. You're not gonna sit there and tell me these people really have a plan to implant something in your brain so they can read your thoughts and control you.
The thing is, we know that you are watching this, and we also know how you feel. Are you angry about what you hear? Are you frightened? Are you bored? This is the kind of power that Stalin didn't have. You know, when Stalin gave a speech, everybody, of course, clapped their hand and smiled. Now, how do you know what they really think about Stalin? It's very difficult. You can't have a KGB agent following everybody all the time. Even if you do it, he's just watching your outside behavior. He doesn't really know what's happening in your mind. But in 10 years, the future Stalins of the 21st century, they could be watching the minds, the brains of all the population all the time. And also they will have the computing power to analyze all that.
But how will they do that? What's their plans? Klaus Schwab lays it out here about the implant in your brain.
Can you imagine that in 10 years when we are sitting here, we have an implant in our brains, and I can immediately feel, because you all will have implants, I can, and we measure your brain waves, and I can immediately tell you how the people react, or I can feel how the people react to your answers. Is it imaginable?
Think your neighbor would be creeped out yet if he watched this? Should be. And that gets us to, well, what do we do about this? That's really scary, right? Well, here's the bad news portion of it. The United States federal government is working hand in hand with these people. It's just the way it is. But your states, you have incredible amounts of state power, incredible amounts of state power. The red states must organize themselves and unite with each other against it. Ron DeSantis lays it out pretty well.
I want to have the values not of Davos imposed on us, but of places like Destin and Dunedin, where I grew up. Things like the World Economic Forum, those policies are dead on arrival in the state of Florida. We are not going to go down that road.
That's how it's done. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have an investigative reporter named Johnny Vedmore joining us. Has some very interesting things to say. Next.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
So we have to define how the world should look like, which we want to come out of this transformation period. I respect China's achievements, which are tremendous over the last over 40 years. I think it's a role model for many countries.
That doesn't sound good at all. Joining me now, Johnny Vedmore, investigative reporter, unlimitedhangout.com. Johnny, okay, Klaus Schwab, it's one of these guys that you would know about, I would know about, but busy Americans don't really occupy themselves with such things. If you told them this guy existed and what he wanted, they'd probably roll their eyes at you. Who is this guy?
Klaus Schwab is a very interesting character indeed. Born 1938 to a father, Eugen Schwab, and Erika Schwab, who was previously a Precht. And Eugen Schwab, his father, during that time was running a Nazi model company in a town in Ravensburg called Escherweiss, who's the biggest employer in the region. And Escherweiss itself was making nuclear bomb casing for the Nazi nuclear bomb efforts. It was making parts for the fighters, parts for the submarines, for the German submarines for the war, and it was helping in the enrichment of uranium by creating large turbines. And Klaus Schwab's father had a massive effect on Klaus Schwab's life. Of course, the Nazis didn't manage to win the war. They didn't manage to win the race to atomic supremacy. And basically in 1964, when Klaus Schwab was leaving university and he was getting degree after degree and he was starting to get honorary degrees too, and he was seen as a big light on the scene, some big new thing. He was told by his father, Eugen Schwab, who had worked for this Nazi model company, he was told, what you need to do is go to Harvard, to the center of where the nuclear debate was happening, the nuclear design, not only the debate, the research. This is where Henry Kissinger had recently finished writing his theses, maybe it was like 10 years before, Nuclear War and Foreign Policy, where Herman Kahn and the Hudson Institute had just released On Thermonuclear War. And Klaus Schwab went and he was invited to Henry Kissinger's international seminar. And this was set up by some of the grandees of the CFR to train basically young leaders, young global leaders. It's a template that Klaus Schwab himself has used for the World Economic Forum's Young Global Leader Program. So he came up through that. He went to Harvard in 1965, left in 1967, but he was a big thing when he left Harvard. Henry Kissinger saw him as a really important figure, and he sent back two grandees back to Europe to help form the World Economic Forum with him. John Kenneth Galbraith, one of the most interesting presidential advisors in history, and he officially professors of economics, but he had one hell of a history himself. He had worked heavily on the strategic bombing campaign during the war, had interrogated Albert Speer, the head of Nazi war armament. armaments at the end of the war, had lots of different connections, was an advisor to JFK, and he was ambassador to India under JFK. And he was quite a big thing at the time. And him and Kissinger were putting on Mandeville lectures in 1967. And Kissinger would put him with Schwab to go and create the World Economic Forum alongside Herman Kahn, known as the real Dr. Strangelove, the man who really is the father of modern nuclear theory. And in this melting pot of Harvard alumni being sent with Schwab over, they managed with Otto von Habsburg to bring together a group of Europeans to form what was the first World Economic Forum, which was originally called European Management Symposium in 1971. That's 4 years after he had left Harvard. And not only when he left Harvard in 1967 did he go on this project, at the same time, his father's old model Nazi company was doing a merger with Sulzer AG, another big company, and a couple other smaller companies. And he was asked to go and sit on the board of that company, his father's old model Nazi company, to which he helped with the merger. And at the same time, the company started to sell weapons parts to the South African apartheid regime. And while Klaus Schwab was second in command of the company under Peter Schmidt-Heine, a company that would eventually become known as Sulzer AG, and he would do the same as his father within the same company, very much a daddy's boy. Go on to create the World Economic Forum in 1971. It went off really well at first. 1972, it slowed down a little bit. People weren't so interested. 1973, he introduced the Club of Rome and Aurelio Pecci. 1972, the Club of Rome had released Limits to Growth, which was the big Malthusian paper that really covered, looked in detail at population reduction being the next big thing to be able to make sure that we're not overusing resources. And that the best way, there was two ways, Limits to Growth said there was two ways to really keep control in the future. One was to use environmentalism to scare people, because what they had to do was spread the message that the enemy of humanity was man itself. And Klaus Schwab invited these guys in 1973, and then it kicked off again. The World Economic Forum became, at that time, like I say, it was a European Management Symposium. Then they rebranded it to European Management Forum. Forum. At the fall of the Berlin Wall, Schwab came along, rebranded it to World Economic Forum, and they began the Global Leaders for Tomorrow Project, which would eventually become the Young Global Leaders Project. The Young Global Leaders Project, when it was formed in 2004, was done so with money from the Dan David Foundation. That was with Kissinger on the board, the continuum of chain in young global leaders who are American aligned. At first, it was about combating Soviet infiltration, combating communism. By the time Schwab's old and training all of these leaders, it's now about keeping control of all the areas where communism has fallen. So Klaus Schwab is a very interesting character. I would describe him as a Mercutio. He's everything to all men. He tries to combine people together. We know how that worked out in Romeo and Juliet for Mercutio. He ended up dying and shouting a pox on both your houses.
Okay, the whole depopulation, we're overpopulated. Is that at the heart of it? Is that really what they're still going for? Is that the end goal? Is that what they want?
Quite amazingly, yes. I found a friend of mine gave me an email saying I found some slides, some training slides from the World Economic Forum. Would you like to have a look through them? And one of the last slides talks about depopulation, talks about manipulation. Multitude of the slides actually mention depopulation in some way. They kind of laugh about it, make a joke about it. In their circles, that seems like such an obvious thing that needs to happen. It's obvious that the planet needs to reduce in population, because we've convinced ourselves and other people of that, so we don't need to argue about that anymore. Everybody else has to get on board. So they kind of laugh at people who are in shock at the idea of what depopulation actually means. And yeah, I mean, the agenda's going on all around us. It seems pretty obvious that they are rolling out something which is Malthusian in nature, which does intend to make sure that less less people are born on this planet. And anybody who knows the math, who understands population drop-off, once you study this sort of stuff, once you go, once a human race stops producing a certain amount of humans per person, then the older generation gets larger, younger generation gets smaller, has to look after the older generation. They no longer give birth. You have a population crash that reduces the population. That's kind of seems what all of their policies are aimed for. I mean, the World Economic Forum is a policy making institute first and foremost. A policy is the base of everything that we, all our laws, all our regulations, all our rules in society, how we live within each other, how we we are managed at work, all go through policy. If you write the policy, you control the people, and that's a lot of what they do. It's a very interesting, I mean, it's extremely interesting to study if you're looking at it, without sort of emotion. Once you apply emotion to what they're doing, you can become very angry very quickly, and you can see the links with all the other Malthusian population control agenda people who are at play.
Johnny, that was outstanding. Come back soon. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jess. Thank you for having me on.
How about that? All right. My buddy Steve Daish joins us next.
Waves of lockdowns and the stresses of finding work or returning to workplaces have even amplified the existential and often silent mental health crisis. So, what should you do? You, the millennials and the Generation Z, what should you do differently? Most immediately, you are calling for the international community to safeguard vaccine equity, to respond to COVID-19 and prevent future health crises. Nobody will be safe if not everybody is vaccinated.
Hold on. So this guy we've been talking about the whole show wants to control the planet. He's deeply involved in the COVID lockdowns and the vaccinations. Man, it almost seems like there must be a connection there. I mean, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, so we'll ask my buddy Steve to clear this up for us. Steve Daish hosts an outstanding show on Blaze TV. Steve, there's no connection, right? I mean, gosh, I don't want to sound like a nut job or anything.
I mean, these are like, it's like we're being demonically trolled. These are the most obvious villains. Like, if we submitted these as scripts for movies to be made, or if I sent this into a publisher as a fiction book, they're like, hey, you know, the Left Behind series already been written, right? It's real freaking life. We could not make this stuff up. All right. Truth really is stranger than fiction, brother.
Steve, make the connection for me. We know about Klaus Schwab. We know about his history. We know a bunch of stuff about his history. But how involved was he in the vaccine push? Because it almost seems like he's a guy who would mastermind such a thing. And why?
You know, we use this term elites, and it has become this sort of amorphous nexus that's sort of undefinable. And in many respects, the West is similar to where it was over 100 years ago with a dynasty known as the Habsburgs, Jesse. And these are where the powers within Europe had intermarried so many times that essentially when they went to war, when they fired off the guns of August in World War I, this was really a family spat. They really went to war against one another. And it was this small vestige group of family members through centuries of intermarrying, these elites, that essentially were making the decisions that caused a massive calamity, the war to end all wars, the most destructive war the world had ever seen up until that point. The same sort of atmosphere is what exists now. I mean, largely what is going on in Ukraine, for example. You have just warring factions of the Habsburgs. You have the black sheep in Vladimir Putin up against the World Economic Forum George Soros wing, you know, who's kind of the big brother here. How dare you go off and do your own thing? And you can do whatever you want to your own people, but you don't invade our kleptocracy. That, you know, that's our scam. You don't invade our scam to run one of your own. That's a lot of the decisions that are being made today. So what does he have to do with these kinds of Klaus Schwab specifically? Everything and nothing at all. Whether he directly involved himself in them, clearly he's inspired by them and his ideas are congruent with them. And therefore, it wouldn't be a stretch at all if you found out that people like him over in Davos were involved in this from the very beginning, because they're all part of the same ideological clan here, brother.
Okay, well, George Soros, I hadn't even put him into this show because we were talking about Klaus Schwab. Are George Soros and Klaus Schwab in cahoots, or are they also another faction that's fighting this faction? It's impossible to keep all this stuff straight.
Yes. Yes is the answer. Yeah, they're all intermarried here. So Soros is the Miss Havisham of Ukraine. He is one of its primary benefactors. So the World Economic Forum and his interests align in Ukraine. That's their kleptocracy. They don't want to give up control of its rich resources and the money laundering scheme they have going there to the likes of Vladimir Putin. So their interests here align. Who knows? Maybe in 6 months, the next story they contrive to ruin all of us, their interests won't align, and Davos and Putin will now be in cahoots against the likes of George Soros. Here's what I can tell you and your audience. It's a big club, and we ain't in it.
How deep is America involved with these groups, Steve?
They're all in the elite sectors from an institutional level. Every major institution in America is either involved in this or aspires to be. That's why they're all aligned against us. We're the last remnant left. We're the last society left that both has a faith in God and is armed, that they can't just roll over. That's why there were more lies about COVID in our country, Jesse, than there were any of these other countries. These other countries, they've already got Denmark gave the best COVID data in the world. Why? Because they're not going to lie to their people. They gave them all the control that they want. So now why destroy my country? I don't need to use this crisis for more hegemony and power. I have it. So now I'm going to take care of the Chi-Coms who are over there starving their people right now. They won't give their people the mRNA jabs. They're like, we're not injecting that poison into our, you know, worker stream here. We actually want healthy workers. I mean, what does that tell you when the Chi-Coms know better than to give their people mRNA technology? And countries like Denmark and Sweden, that for 20 years, people like you and I have been told America needs to become more like the socialist haven of Sweden. And yet they were the best, most honest places for COVID government over the last 3 years. It's because in those places, the state has the power it wants. Right now, the uprising in China threatens its stability. And that's why the very same citizens that it wouldn't give the mRNA jabs to, it's willing to starve and put down, okay? Because it's about their agenda, not about the people. This is the last place left where the people still think their rights come from God and are armed to do something about it should someone challenge that belief. And so that's why there is more deception and dishonesty here than exists almost anywhere else. And you know, in most of these other countries, you can't advertise pharmaceuticals. Did you know that? Like, you can't advertise vaccines and stuff on television. And yet much of the media, right and left, including many of our peers and conservative media, have all taken, in many cases, have taken money in order to become shills for Pfizer and Moderna. It's worse here than anywhere in the world because we're the last outpost left.
Well, at least that's partially a good thing, I guess. Steve Dace, go watch his show. I love his show. Thank you, brother.
You got it, man. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. All right. Climate. When you hear these people like Schwab or Soros and these guys talk, it always seems to come back to climate. Why does it come back to climate so much? Johnny mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show. We're going to talk to Mark Moreno about this next. What is their goal? Hang on.
One thing you should be very clear is that humanity has the power to prevent catastrophic climate change. It's completely on us. It's not an inevitable natural disaster. We have the scientific knowledge. We also have the economic resources. It's estimated that if we invest about 2% of global GDP in developing the right technology and infrastructure, we can prevent catastrophic climate change.
Oh, okay. Well, just 2%. Doesn't sound that bad. Look, it's pretty easy. I don't want the world to end. Joining me now, Mark Moreno, author of the great book, The Great Reset. Mark, I don't know what the big deal is. It's just 2% of the global GDP. What's your problem?
Well, here's the interesting. That was Yuval Harari, the top advisor to the World Economic Forum, and of course, the Great Reset. What he's saying is essentially that we need a small group of people with vested financial interests to make these decisions where that gigantic 2%, when you're talking about the world's gross domestic GDP, it's going to be a huge number, where that money is going to go and how it's going to be invested. Well, first of all, we can avoid catastrophic climate change easily by free market and wealth creation. And we've done that for the last 100 years. We've had that experiment and we've shown how to do it. 100 years ago, since the 1920s, we've had a 99% drop in climate-related deaths. How did we do that? Better infrastructure, fossil fuels, early warning system, and the fact that as CO2 has gone up in the atmosphere, the weather not only is not more extreme, the weather is actually less extreme. Higher CO2 has resulted, not saying correlation is causation, but to actually less bad weather. So what he's arguing is that somehow we can come up with some new technology. I think he's talking about investments in solar and wind, and that's going to prevent catastrophic climate change. No, we just need wealth creation, and the death toll will drop 99%, and there is no catastrophic climate change caused by man anyway.
Mark, how climate friendly are those solar panels anyway?
It's bonkers when people say, and this was on Jake Tapper, CNN asked the governor of Virginia, well, don't you want to become energy independent and go solar? And, why are you not supporting more solar, wind panels? I'm sorry, energy independence, 90% of the solar panels come from China. China has an outrageous human rights and environmental record. We're going to be getting manufactured, made from Uyghur slaves, from underage cobalt mining, from underage children in Africa, according to international human rights groups, run by Chinese firms. And we're going to be empowering China more, even more so than our past policies have done. And it is the furthest thing from energy independence. In the case of like an electric car, for example, it takes 500,000 pounds of materials to make one electric car battery. This is insane. All it's done, renewables, solar, wind, dig the earth. And not in a 1970s Brady Bunch groovy way. I mean, they have to excavate deep to make this happen. And we're not allowed to do the excavating. We have to farm it out. That's why Joe Biden, even with fossil fuels now, Joe Biden's getting it from Venezuela, begging OPEC and other nations for our oil. I mean, this is insane. Absolutely not more earth-friendly in any way, shape, or form. And then there's the whole issue of disposal of solar and wind farms and EV batteries.
Okay, Mark, can you help me understand what percentage of the people who push this nonsense actually believe it? And what percentage of it is just about money and power and control? You're the expert on this stuff. I'm not. But it sure seems like most of these people don't believe it either.
Yeah, it's a great question. What they realized, they couldn't even convince U.S. adults of the seriousness of the climate crisis. And so a few years back, they decided, well, we can't scare adults, so let's go after the kids. So beginning in kindergarten through college, the indoctrination, you have the whole the youth groups rising up, the climate activists suing the government to achieve better climate. You have the rise of Greta Thunberg, the Sunrise Movement. So I think all of these kids, unfortunately, are true believers. You have a few ideologues, say in the United Nations, and activists who actually believe that we face the end of the world. And even this man you played, Yuval Harari, I mean, he might be a true believer. He's allegedly some intellectual who people like Bill Gates devour all of his thoughts and books and love him. But the problem is, even if these are true believers, they mix with the greenwashers, the billionaires, the multinational corporations, and all the bureaucrats and politicians and the power-hungry people like Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, and this whole thing where you may have only 5% true believer turns into an elaborate con of you must do what we say or the earth's going to get you. It's like an old mob protection racket. Hate to see something bad happen to your home. Well, if you pay up and give us most of your income and ban your gas-powered cars and we need control of your thermostat and you can't eat any more meat, we can make sure the earth's weather doesn't get you in the end. That's what they're selling. Very few people actually believe it. But at this point, it's become, you know, a way to make money, a way to gain power, a way to get attention, a way to virtue signal. And it shows no signs of abating. In fact, as COVID and climate have merged together now, unchecked climate change allegedly leads to more COVID-like viruses. So if you don't support the Green New Deal, you're a grandma killer.
Mark, Klaus Schwab has some very interesting things, meaning horrific things to say about global energy and food systems and supply chains. And well, here he is.
Go ahead.
We do not yet know the full extent and the systemic and structural changes which will happen. However, we do know that global energy systems, food systems, and supply chains will be deeply affected.
What does that mean, Mark?
It's a scare tactic to give you so that we give over more of our power to him, so he and his ideas and his colleagues can save us. But here's the reality. They've been predicting things like food shortages due to climate change for decades. It's going to affect crop shortages. It's going to affect beer production. It's going to affect coffee production. What ended up happening is enough governments listened to this nonsense, started following a net zero climate policy, limiting emissions, and what's happened? The Netherlands shutting down high-yield agriculture. The Netherlands shutting the number one meat exporter in Europe, shutting down animal agriculture. Canada now doing the same. Australia following suit. Across the world, a war on modern high-yield agriculture is happening, which is creating what? Food shortages, food price skyrocketing, meat shortages. All part of their agenda, by the way, to make you not eat meat and to make you eat insects and lab-grown meat and fake meat. But what ends up happening, and this is the kicker of hypocrisy and irony, climate never caused these shortages they're talking about, but their climate policies created all of this mess. And even after the mess is created by their climate policies, they will look at the camera with a straight face and say, see, we warn you climate change would cause food shortages. It didn't. It was their policies. And therefore, we need more of these policies to save us, which will create more food shortages. It's nuts, but it's all part of the Great Reset. Collapse the current system, build back, and essentially your fascist Marxist system that they envision of total control by the fewest amount of people in the world. National sovereignty gets erased. Economic choice gets erased, and you have a small cabal of World Economic Forum, United Nations, corporations colluding to decide everything from whether you can drive a gas-powered cars, eat meat, how you can do your thermostat. And it's incredible. None of us voted for any of that, but it's being imposed upon us.
It's wild. Mark Moreno, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jesse.
All right. I have some final thoughts. Hang on. Some conspiracies, many conspiracies anymore, aren't really conspiracies at all. It's the truth. And when they're called conspiracies by the people who are actually doing the evil things, so you will be too ashamed to talk about them to that normal neighbor of yours across the street. I'm not saying you need to go out there and knock on every door in your neighborhood and say, have you heard of Klaus Schwab? Did you know about the World Economic Forum? You don't have to be a weirdo about it. But I am saying this, should the opportunity arise, explain to friends and family and neighbors what is happening. They don't know. They're not super interested. They're not highly informed like you. We do this because we love it, because we're interested in it, because we know it changes the world. Many people are not interested in it. So make sure they're aware. Make sure your neighbor goes from rolling his eyes next time you talk about the global elite trying to destroy us. Make sure he goes from that to saying, you know, he's right. I looked into it. I used to think he was crazy, but he has a good point. All right? All right, we'll do it again.
Each morning, the President of the United States receives a highly classified briefing on the most important issues facing the country. It's called the President's Daily Brief, or PDB. It's delivered by America's spies and analysts. Well, now you can hear your very own PDB in the form of a podcast hosted by me, Brian Dean Wright, a former CIA operations officer. Each morning at 6 a.m. Eastern, I'll bring you 15 to 20 minutes of the most important issues facing the country, giving you the critical intelligence and analysis you need to start your morning.
This is an iHeart podcast.